So, in discussion of the four varnas, then here we have a lecture from Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam 6.1.22, given in Chicago on July 6, 1975. This is from the story of Ajamil. This fallen Brahmin, Ajamil, gave trouble to others by arresting them, by cheating them in gambling, or by directly plundering them. This was the way he earned his livelihood and maintained his wife and children. So then Prabhupada mentions, so this man, Ajamil, as soon as he became fallen down from the sadachar, gentleman's behavior, the next stage is this, bandhya akshay, by unnecessarily arresting someone, kaita vice, by cheating in gambling or throwing dice, chaurai, by committing theft. One must earn his livelihood, but he has fallen down to the sixth grade, first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, or lower than that. Everyone must have his livelihood. So now Prabhupada describes the livelihood of the Brahmins. Rabindra Swarup Prabhu was mentioning is that see, you have in the Vedic culture, then one has to perform activities. So that activities are based on one's conditioned nature. Then in the conditioned nature, there are different rules that go with that. So that is the scriptural injunction. Then there's the application of this, or the rules of actual, the occupation, that's the vritti. So these rules that one follows, then that is what Prabhupada is getting here. So in this, because today's discussion we were going to start with understanding how to find one's own position, how one fits into the whole social structure, then it's, Rabindra Swarup pointed out, it's very easy. You have to understand what is the occupational duty. What is it you can do, what you can't do. Then according to that, then it makes things very easy. Livelihood of Brahmins. So what is the means of livelihood of the first class man? That is said, patana, yajana, yajana, dana, pratigraha. First class man means brahminical class. Their occupational duty is first of all, he must become a very learned scholar in the Vedic literature. Veda patad bhavet vipra. He must become a learned scholar. And after becoming a scholar, it is not that he will enjoy himself the knowledge. No, he will distribute the knowledge. This is one. That first class man, or the Brahmin, first of all, he must become a learned scholar. If he is not scholar, what he will? Nonsense, he will teach. So the first portion is that he must become a learned scholar. And the next business is to teach others, to make disciples. Formerly, even 50 or 60 years ago in India, a Brahmana would not accept anyone's service. Because whatever he has knowledge, he would sit down anywhere, underneath a tree or in a corridor of somebody, or he will invite the village small children and they will go. And he will teach little grammar, little mathematics, gradually. And the children will bring bring from their father and mother. Somebody will bring rice, somebody will bring dal, somebody will bring something. So he had no necessity of making contract, that you give me so many dollars, then I will teach you. No, free education. In this way, India was free education. So patana, yajana. The next business is Brahmin should be devotee, worshipping deity, either Vishnu or sometimes other demigod. So yajana. He will personally do it, and he will teach others how to worship. Patana, yajana. And his livelihood by voluntary contribution. Whatever people will give, that's all right. People used to give brahmana. So patana, yajana, dana pratigraha. A brahmin would receive. People were very honest that this man is teaching our children. He does not charge. This man is teaching me how to worship, how to become well behaved. So they have no scarcity, enough. So he would simply use as much as he required. Balance he would give in charity. Not to keep in stock for tomorrow. No, that is not Brahmana's business. Whatever has come today, I use it for my necessities of life and balance. I give to the poor or someone else. Somebody else. Somebody. Or make some festival. So patana patana yajana yajana dana pratigraha. So we require some income for our maintenance. So this was the Brahmana's business. There is no question of doing some business, or making some profession, or going to the office, or going to the factory. This is not Brahmana's business. So these six, patana patana, are studying and then teaching others. Yajana yajana, performing sacrifice and teaching others, or doing sacrifice for others. And dana pratigraha, that he would receive charity, dana, and he would, pratigraha, and he would give in charity, dana. So here we see the Brahman, he is, the main principle here, is he's fully dependent upon the Lord. Whatever the Lord sends, that's what he accepts. He does not demand. It is one of the rules that one cannot, let's say one has accepted an invitation to perform some sacrifice or some ceremony for someone. Then if a second person comes along and offers to do, they also want a ceremony and it conflicts, then one cannot give up the one for the other because the second person is giving more money. Right? That is, cannot be a consideration. This happened in, I forget what the name of the king was, but Vishishta, and he was the Rajguru of one of the kings, and the king wanted to do a sacrifice. So then, at the same time, Vishishta had received a invitation from Indra to do a sacrifice. So he took the invitation of Indra and went there. So he said he would be right back. But naturally the demigod's time is a little longer. Long time went by and the king decided this is getting too long and he invited another priest and did the sacrifice. So when Vishishta came back, he was very upset. Because he had seen now the king had already done the sacrifice, he had told him to wait. And the king said, listen, it was getting so long and this and that, so then, we have to be practical. But Vishishta was very upset, and he cursed the king that he will become unembodied, means he will be without a body, like a ghost, because he did not respect his authorities. And then the king, who was also a devotee, who was no less powerful, he cursed Vishishta, saying that, your only interest to do both was that you get more money. You wanted to do the demigods first. They give you much more respect, much more facility. It's nice up there in the heavenly planets. That's why you did it. Your business as the Rajguru here of this kingdom is to take care of this kingdom. But instead, you out of your own greed went to the heavenly planets. So I curse you that you are such a greedy Brahmin that you also become unembodied. So both of them then were there in the air with no bodies. So then afterwards, I think some arrangement was made and, Vishishta again appeared. And then they called on then Vishishta understood his problem. And they called on the king, say, you come back and all this and, take your body again, continuing your duties. But then the king said, no. Says, this material life is so much of a disturbance, and I'm properly performing my duty, and I'm being cursed by, all this and that. I'm not taking the body. So from there, he just went back to Godhead. He didn't bother. So, like this, as we see that if one misbehaves, it's a disturbance. Because along with this, then, means the Brahman is living simply, he depends upon the Lord. So whatever the Lord sends, if he sends something simple, he sends something elaborate, it doesn't matter. Because whatever the position, the Brahman will keep what he needs, and the rest he'll give in charity or hold a festival. It's not that the Brahman, he gets more, he keeps more. The Brahman, what he gets, that he lives off of. And what he does, and if he gets more than what he requires, he gives that away, because other qualified Brahmins are there, they may not have gotten, right? You have one yajna, how many priests can go? So the one priest that gets more, he takes that, right? We hear so many times, the king gives 10,000 cows in charity to one Brahmana. What one Brahmana will do with 10,000 cows? Right? Unless he has a very big, big ashram, he's teaching thousands of students, like, let's say, Durvasa Muni, he has 10,000 students. Okay, then 10,000 cows, not a problem. Right? One student takes care of one cow. But otherwise, if it's just him, he's running a small school, or just doing, he doesn't require. So he'll keep how many cows he needs. He needs 5 cows, he keeps 5. And he gives the other 9,995 cows away. And he won't just give to anybody, but he will also give to qualified persons, qualified brahmanas. So in this way, then, the king gets benefit for having given charity to the brahmanas. Then the brahman gets the benefit for having given charity. The same charity then he gives to another brahman, gives him 100 cows. He doesn't need 100. He also only needs 5 or 10. He gives away 90 cows. So in this way, the one charity, so many people are benefited, the wealth is distributed, and so much benefit of charity is then gained by everybody. So, the main principle is that the brahmana works for free. He teaches for free, he does sacrifice for free, and then as Prabhupada points out here, this man is teaching our children, he does not charge. This man is teaching me how to worship, how to become well-behaved. So the people appreciate. See, this is one of the foundational principles of human life, is gratitude. Many, we may wonder, how is it, why is it so hard to establish Varnashram? Because the main foundations of Varnashram must be established along with it. If there's no gratitude, then how will anybody survive? If there's no respect, how will the system go on? If there's no sense control, how will it go on? If there's no cleanliness, how will there be proper upliftment of the culture? So unless these things are in place, Varnashram is not mechanics. Okay, here, Brahman just lives by charity, but how he'll live by charity? He lives by charity because he understands Krishna is taking care of me. Whatever Krishna sends me, that's what I have. Krishna can send me a lot, he can send me a little. Krishna is not a poor man. How much he wants, we see. How much Krishna gave to Sudama Brahmana. Krishna wants, he gives that much. If he doesn't give anything. Why? Now, why are the Brahmins dear? Just because they only accept the charity, or they live simply? No, because they are dependent upon the Lord. So being dependent upon the Lord, that is what endears them to Krishna. So when the brahmana accepts whatever Krishna gives, that means whatever Krishna gives. So if he gives them a little facility, sometimes he's staying in this place, sometimes he's in that place, sometimes he has more, sometimes less. You know, sometimes it's a feast, sometimes he fasts. That is brahmana. Right? That mentality means then we can live with whatever charity we get, and if we get extra, we can give it away. He does not worry what will come tomorrow. This is the best. Someone's a little bit more, okay, he may take a vow, okay, I'll only keep as much for 3 days. And then after 3 days, he gives that away. And if it's more, or if he's a little bit more worried, okay, he'll keep enough for 1 month. After that, he'll give it away. Maximum, he can keep up to 1 year. Right? But it's understood that the less he's keeping, the more elevated he is in his dependence upon the Lord. So the Brahman who keeps for 1 year should respect that Brahman who keeps only for the 1 day. Because for Brahmanas, material wealth is not the sign of respect. For the Brahmanas, it's knowledge. Who has knowledge? Who acts according to that knowledge? Right? So knowledge is not just book knowledge. When you take that book knowledge, that's okay. Right? The Manu Samhita mentions that the first level, the Dvija, he is respected because he is Dvija. He has been initiated into the rites of how you say, being a Brahmin. He can perform the activities, the sacrifice. But he may have very minimal knowledge. He knows how to do the ritual only. More respectable than that is the Brahmin who actually knows something. He is learned. So that is in the class of Vipra. Vipra means one who has knowledge, one who knows. So if he has vast body of knowledge, that is better. Then, better than that in the class of Vipra is one who knows how to apply it. One who knows what the obligations of a Brahmin are. Then the top of the Vipras is one who knows, who applies it, who follows it. They act according to that knowledge. And then the topmost platform of a Brahmin is the devotee, the Vaishnava. That the Vaishnava understands what is the ultimate purpose of this knowledge. So that is the classes. So it's understood that each one of those is more respectable than the other. In the same way, one who is more dependent upon the Lord is also more respectable. So this is the essential thing. The Brahmana has qualities, he studies, he teaches for others, he performs these things for others. In other words, he works for everyone else's welfare. And then how is this culture maintained? Because everybody else is grateful. Not that, oh, okay, he did this and that, it wasn't much, it only took him 5 minutes, so I'll give him 5 rupees. We work on this, how long did it take to sell a sari? It took 5 minutes and we got so many thousands of rupees out of it. So we have to be very, very careful in the calculation. Right? We have to be very careful. When there's gratefulness that this person knows this, he does this nicely, then they give in charity to that person, then it works very fine. The Brahmin is not asking, but he is being taken care of very nicely. Then whatever comes, he is satisfied. In other words, other members of society must be grateful and give according to their ability, and the Brahmin must be satisfied with whatever he gets. So this is Brahmana. He does not, as such, make business. Then the Kshatriya, livelihood of a Kshatriya. So what is his livelihood? His livelihood, to take tax. The Kshatriyas were entrusted certain villages. You look after these villages, that the people are becoming well-behaved. So Kshatriya's business was to see whether Brahmana is actually acting as Brahmana, a Kshatriya actually acting as Kshatriya. This was the ruler's business to see. And to see that nobody is unemployed. Everyone is devil's workshop. Nobody is a devil's workshop. Because if you have no business, no occupation, then your brain will plan something. This plan is chauryam, stealing and cheating. They had no opportunity to plan all these things. So Kshatriya's income is to take some tax. What is that tax? Not in money. But people are engaged in agricultural work. So whatever he has produced, he gives 25% to the ruler. That's all. That includes income tax, this tax, that tax, no more tax. Take whatever I've got. You take 25%. So this is a Kshatriya's occupation, second class. So the Kshatriya then he maintains himself by tax. And his main duties here then is mentioned by Manu is protecting his subjects, giving in charity, having sacrifices performed, studying, and remaining unaddicted to the sensory objects. This is in summary for a ruler. So interestingly, we note in both Prabhupada's mention of how he maintains himself, which is by tax, and here how Manu says that he performs his activities. Neither of them it mentioned, you know, management or martial arts. Generally when we think, okay, we have to establish some Kshatriya training, what to do, the first two points that come up are martial arts and management, right? So management, then we get out a book by Kavi, and martial arts, and we go down to the local karate place, and voila, you have a Kshatriya. But somehow or another, it seems Manu and Prabhupada don't agree with this approach. Is here, is protecting his subjects. Means whatever he's doing is for protecting the subjects, not for some other reason. There's not another purpose. So he's taking of the tax is for protecting the people. Just as the Brahmin, he gets his knowledge and he uses that for everyone else. And he takes charity. So the Kshatriya, he protects everybody. That is his service to everybody. And he takes tax. Right? He takes tax from those who are producing. Those who produce, he gives tax, takes tax. Those who aren't producing, there is no tax. So then, and he gives in charity. So this way he maintains the Brahmins, he maintains those under him. And he performs sacrifice, so he's always engaged in spiritual activities. A king is not just a manager. That is an art. It's the art of management. Management's an art. That's why it's not the main principle. That's why Prabhupada doesn't say manager, he says administrator. Because he is to see that everything is going on nicely. Management's an art. Kshatriyas know the art of management. But then we also see Brahmins know. We also see the Vaishyas know. You have to manage your business. You know, an artist, he has to manage his facilities. You know, in the home, then the family members must manage the house. So management is not something specifically to the Kshatriya. It is the overall seeing and protection of everybody under. And as Prabhupada pointed out, he sees that behavior is proper. The Brahmins are acting as Brahmins, Kshatriyas as Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Shudras are behaving properly. Then it works very nicely. So those who understand and can see that others behave properly and create the facilities and the protection in which they can behave properly, that is Kshatriya. Right? It's not just an expert manager. That's part. That's part. And then studying. The Kshatriya must always be studying and improving his knowledge because he must rule according to the scriptures. So if he doesn't know the scriptures, he's not deepening his understanding of the scriptures, how he'll be a Kshatriya. So he must be constantly deepening that. And this makes the tight bond between the Kshatriyas and the Brahmanas. Because the Brahmanas know the Shastra. And the Brahmins can advise the king. So the king wants to hear from the Brahmanas. Otherwise, the king may get too caught up in his activities and miss fine points in the scripture. Therefore, he must always be in association of Brahmanas, so that he learns, he's always increasing his understanding, his realization. That is Kshatriya. And he must remain unaddicted to the sensory objects. So this, normally when we think of a king, then we are thinking, oh, this doesn't have anything to do with it. I mean, what does... We always think of a king very opulent, very lavish, enjoying the senses, but actually that's not a king at all. Maybe an unqualified king, but not a qualified king. Qualified king is not like that. They have facility. There's two reasons. One for the public is that someone is part of a kingdom, or someone is part of some man is a is part of a kingdom. Everyone likes to feel my king is the best. Right? Just like the child, my father's the best, you know, or our community's the best, or our village or town is the best, or our nation is the best. So the king must be the best. So if he doesn't have the biggest place, have the most wealth, have the most power, then how will people be satisfied that this person can take care? But as we see that what the kshatriya has, it actually belongs to the state, but it's managed by him and through his agencies. Because when the king leaves and the next one comes in line, it's all left to them. He doesn't take it with him when he goes to the forest. He doesn't say, I built up this kingdom and made this palace and got all these warriors and took so much tax and I'm taking it with me. No, it's left. Because all that wealth was simply for the welfare of the citizens. So one, if he doesn't look like he's the biggest, so many people who are materialistic and are untrained, they will think, oh, he's a small-timer. He lives in a house like I do. You know, he just looks the same as everybody else. So for those who are materialistic, there must be this great difference between a king and those who are not. Of course, in the Vaishnav society, that's not so important because everyone has proper training and respect. But when you're dealing with materialists, it's much more important. The other aspect is that stress, which is very harsh on the mind and the intelligence, must be balanced by something soft. Right? So therefore, the king during the day has to deal with the kingdom and all the problems and the politics of the kingdom. Then the evening, then that is spent in fine things. He has his fine palace, he hears fine music, eats fine food, dresses in fine clothes. You know, all the people around him are very refined. You know, his family members are very trained. So then the mind becomes peaceful. It gets balanced. And then the next day, his mind is sharp and ready for the day's management. Right? And then in the morning time, he spends that, as it mentioned, for sacrifice. So he is busy in all the different pujas and dealing with the brahmanas and worship and all these different kinds of things. We see even Yudhishthira. He'd wake up in the morning on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. He'd get up, he'd take his bath, he'd put on some nice fine, you know, clean silk cloth, then he would go and sit in the sacrifice, then give in charity to the Brahmins, then, you know, take care of a little bit of business like that, you know, small things like that. Then he would dress, and then he's ready for the war. But even on the battlefield, the morning was spent in sacrifice, and the evening was spent with friends, with relatives, well-wishers, family members. They knew how to run a kingdom. They knew how to behave. They know if a king works from morning to night, foaming at the mouth, email in the morning, email at night, all day, you're going to end up with a useless manager. Because how many months can they go answering 200 email messages a day before they fry out? Right? So in the Vedic system, they would not do that to their leaders. Because they know they will become useless. So the Vedic system was, you have a time in the day, you devote that for your administration and that, and then after that it stops. If it's an emergency, that's another thing. But as a regular daily thing, that's it. Just like business. You do business for a certain amount of time, you accept whatever that comes, at a certain point it's cut off, and then it's time for spiritual activities, associating with devotees, family, all these things. You have your art, you do that, you have a cutoff point. Otherwise, if we do it 24 hours a day, it's just time before things fall apart. How long one can last. So, this is the kshatriya, is that the thrust is protection. So to protect, he must have facility. And he gets that facility by taking tax. So his occupation is tax. Then Prabhupada goes on, livelihood of Vaishya, Shudra, and lower. Vaishya means produce food grains, krishi, agriculture, not produce food in the slaughterhouse. No, slaughterhouse, even the sixth class, seventh class men, they do not know how to produce food, how to live. That means the aborigines in the jungle. They were hunting one animal, then eating, not that civilized nation, organized slaughterhouse. Oh, how horrible it is. If you want to eat animals, then you go to the jungle, kill one animal and eat. The government is not going to maintain a slaughterhouse for you, you see? This is civilization. So our edibles should be food grains, krishi goraksha, and milk. Krishi means agricultural process. You can produce fruits, flowers, vegetables, then rice, wheat, and pulses, and you have got milk. Then where is your want? Scarcity. This is civilization. Meat eating is meant for the sixth class, seventh class men who does not know, who remain naked, and they can either produce food, who can neither produce food, neither cloth in the jungle. It is for them. They also are not very much expert to maintain a slaughterhouse. When you need, you kill one lower animal, not cow. The cow is not available in the jungle. You can have some deer or some boar. So these unimportant animals were killed by them. That is sixth class. Not the first class, second class, third class, or fourth class. No. And the fourth class man who could not utilize his brain as first class, second class, and third class, then he becomes fourth class, his business to help, worker, these higher three classes. So in this way, everyone must have his means of livelihood. And I have already described that this is the way of livelihood. First class men, this is livelihood. Second class men, this is livelihood. And third class men, this is livelihood. Fourth class men. And below the fourth class means fifth class. The fifth class man, the jungle man, by hunting like that. So here he's mentioning in the Vedic culture, the slaughterhouse was never there. Even those who ate animals, they still didn't have a slaughterhouse. They would go out, catch one animal, eat that. They couldn't organize more than that, because you had to go out yourself and get it yourself. So he says, this is the proper civilization. And there would be no problem about cow slaughter, because there were no cows in the jungle. So whatever lived in the jungle, that they would catch and eat. People like to go with no clothes, then they can do that. Just go to the jungle, right? It's just not available there. You just wear whatever you get, you know. A few grasses, some gourds, you know, that's it. Quite nice, you know. So here we see that then those who know how to, through trade, through agriculture, through livestock, through trade or money lending, like this, then that is Vaishya. Vaishya means you give him some money today, you come back tomorrow, he has more money. Right? Vaishya is not one who says, oh, no one's given us a chance, no one's given us any money that we can invest and try to set up our own scene. That is not Vaishya. Vaishya means you give him $100 today, tomorrow he comes back with 150 or 200. Depends how clever he is. But someone you give $100, they come back tomorrow, we'll try again. This is not Vaishya. Right? So we can see it is fairly easy to understand how these work. Means either we can live very simply, whatever Krishna provides, we are studied, knowledgeable, we train others, we preach, we do puja. This is the livelihood of that person, the Brahmin. They can organize everything and see that all departments are going on nicely. No one is unengaged. They know how to engage people. They understand the Varnashram system, how to train people and engage them. Not so much train, but see that they are engaged. The Brahmin knows how to train. Then, and they live by tax. Means if you don't manage properly, you don't get any tax. Right? If the people aren't protected, the thieves come and steal everything, there is no tax. Right? So it's not just we are big and we spend. No. It's everything is being done for the running, proper running and protection of the people. Then, if one finds that is not our livelihood, then we do business. Business, agriculture, you know, some kind of trade, take care of the cows. Then we do like that. And if we can't do that, then we have two other options. Either we assist these other three persons, or we go to the jungle. So it makes it quite easy. One can just go through this. Do I fancy myself just living what Krishna provides in this way, through just charity, and I teach others, or by doing some very serious administration and overseeing and protecting people, or by doing business, trade, all agriculture, this. So this is, it's very, very, very simple. And then, if not, then that means we have an intelligence that we can do part of those, and we assist those others. Like someone is very good salesman. They don't know business, they know how to sell things. They assist the businessmen. Someone knows some administrative things, they're good at different aspects. They can't run the whole thing, they assist. Right? Someone knows some aspects of the Brahminical culture, like this, has knowledge in those areas, they assist in there. Like your Ayurvedic doctor, he has to grow herbs. He has to grow them, harvest them, prepare them into medicines. He has to give massage, he has to administer the medicines. These are all arts. So those who know those arts, they assist that brahmana. So it's very, very interesting, very simple. The system is very simple. Now, the thing to see is that the problem only comes up when we look at this system from the materialistic point of view, based on distinction, adoration, and profit. So if that is the motive, then this system seems a little bit, maybe a disturbance. Because depending upon what we value, then we're going to think I'm left out on something, right? I mean, the perfection would be, is you know, I have the, you know, freedom to study and do everything I like and that, and tell anybody what I, you know, give advice to everybody, you know. At the same time, I have complete control of everything, and I make my money and do what I want, and I can lay back and not take so many responsibilities, and as I like, I do, right? Sounds pretty good, no? Yeah. Well, that's called the Ardha Kukuta Nyaya. Means you have a chicken. So this chicken, one end gives an egg. So that's not so bad. The other end eats. That's a problem. So I'll solve the problem. I'll cut the chicken in half, and I will keep the part that gives the egg. And then I don't have to bother about feeding it and all those problems. So I will just take those things, what is nice about the Brahman, his independence, no one tells him what to do, and all that. But I don't really like the idea that he just lives on whatever comes along. You know, I want some security, some, you know, I want to know what's happening tomorrow. You know, I want to put something away. You know, it's like this, I want more. I do a sacrifice, you know, the guy's got to give me this much money. You know, it's not that I'll just take whatever he gives. So I leave that side, right? And, you know, the Vaishya, they make money, they do all these things. I'll take that part of it. But, you know, then they have to give in charity and all that stuff like that. Well, we don't like that. The Brahmins receive charity. I like that part. So all that, you know. And then the Kshatriyas, you know, they have the influence to tell everybody what to do and all that. But then they have to take responsibility. And if the problems are there, oh, that's not my problem. Like that. I just have the power. I don't want to take the, I don't want to protect. I just want the power and influence. And then, you know, then common person, you know, maybe they're more strict, maybe less strict. So, you know, my sadhana goes how I like. Don't bother me. I'm a devotee, you know. Give me a break. So we have to be very, very careful about this. That's why Krishna says in the Gita, better to do your occupation not so well than to do another's better. Because we have a mentality, we can actually purify ourselves by doing our occupation. Otherwise, if we do someone else's, because we like the facilities of it, you know, then that is not good. We have to do what fits us. Now, in this, then Manu gives directions that these are what's there. So now one must see this and see that one is satisfied doing. Right? This is an important element, is that we take up the service, we take up the occupation, the vritti, how we earn our livelihood, and what are our responsibilities. And if we are satisfied, then that is our position. If we're not satisfied, it is not our position. So then we must make the adjustments till we find that position where we are satisfied. So by our own understanding and by the advice and direction of others, then we are able to situate ourselves. But satisfied means also as a matter of training. Because we find we've done all these four different things and we're still not satisfied, then we have the fifth class option. We go to the jungle, right? Now it's not a bad option, right? Y2K, they all suggest everyone moves out into the jungle or out into the forest like that. So here's the opportunity. One can do it without anybody know. Okay, I've tried all the different varnas, ashrams. I don't fit into anyone. So, you know, Y2K, we're just, you know, moving out, and then no one will notice that you didn't move back, you know? So the point is this is human life. Now, and the last thing is one who assists the others, they must be able to do that without resentment. They can't feel bad that why this guy's in charge and I'm not. Otherwise, this also is not a good servant, is not a good Shudra. Shudra means I have knowledge in this area, I have ability in this area, and I use it under others' direction that it goes out to the society. Right? Someone may be very expert, let's say in mathematics. So how are they going to use it? So now if they're engaged as an engineer or as an accountant, something like this, by the Vaishyas, by the Kshatriyas, by the Brahmins, then the society gets benefited. On their own, how they're going to arrange it. So one must see that this is their service to the society. They serve under someone who has an idea what to do with the activities. The Vaishyas, they serve society by generating all the economic development that's used by the whole society. They take care of their own assistants. They give tax to the Kshatriyas and they give charity to the Brahmins. That way they take care of everybody. The Kshatriyas, they protect everybody. And the Brahmins, they give knowledge. They give training to everybody. So we see is everybody is actually servant. And these aspects where they come from the Lord, the Brahmins from the mouth of the Lord, the Kshatriyas from the arms, the Vaishyas from the stomach, the Shudras from the feet, we have to understand these are coming from the Lord's body. Right? So we don't think that one part of the body of the Lord is better than the other. Well, the feet are not good. Well, the Lord's mouth, the Brahmins come from the mouth, it's the most pure, I'll only worship His mouth. You know? We should change in the item, 16 items, that you have padyam, where you worship the feet of the Lord. We will change this to, you know, mukyam. We'll offer some water to the mouth. Because, right, mouth is better. No. If we actually understand the system, then the no one position is better than the other. The Vaishya is not better than the Shudra, nor is he less than the Kshatriya, the Brahmin. You need all of them to make everything work. And then on top of this, we have the aspect of the devotional culture. Is that in Daivavarna Ashram, everyone is a devotee. So because everyone is a devotee, therefore also one is not better than the other because of occupational duty. Because amongst devotees, it doesn't matter what is the occupation. Amongst devotees, what matters is your dedication, your being fixed in the service to the spiritual master, fixed in our service to the Lord, our chanting, our studying, our understanding the scriptures, our dedication to the preaching mission. Right? In other words, the devotional qualities, that is what is there. These others are side things. Everybody must maintain themselves. Everybody must eat and clothe themselves. So here's four different ways in which that can be done. So this is the consideration. So it's only because of very materialistic people who are interested in distinction, adoration, and profit, that the emphasis has been put on the Brahman is better than the Kshatriya, better than the Vaishya, better than the Shudra. Right? The real thing of understanding these things is because of the opulences of the Lord. Everyone is respected because they have different opulences of the Lord. Shudras are respected for their fame, right? Or for their age. A Shudra is someone who is like, you have a musician. How do you judge who is more respectable than the other? Who's more famous, right? Someone mentions the name of some musician and nobody's ever heard of him. Not a whole lot of respect is offered. But if everybody's heard of them, more respect is there. So for the Shudra, fame is the most important element. And then amongst them, then age naturally is there. Someone who's older is generally more expert than someone who's younger, right? Someone who's been doing carpentry for 50 years is generally more expert than someone who's been doing for 5 years, right? That's just the general principles. We're talking generally. For the Vaishya, then it's wealth. Who has the most wealth, they're the most respectable. Right? When they get so much wealth, then they become like kings, like Nanda Baba. He's a king amongst Vaishyas. He's not a Kshatriya king, because he's paying tax. He is a Vaishya. But he is king of the Vaishyas, because he's the biggest of all the Vaishyas. So he lives very similar like a king. But his businesses, his agriculture, his cows, all these different things. So wealth then. So wealth is more how you say? Respectable than fame. But both must be respected. Right? Then influence. The Kshatriyas have influence. They are able to get things done on a very broad. How much influence they have means how big their kingdom is, that much they are respected. Right? Someone is a small king, his influence is small. Someone is the emperor of the world, his influence is very great. So he's respected more. And amongst Brahmins, it is knowledge. Right? Then when they realize that knowledge, then they become devotees. And amongst devotees, then it's devotion to the Lord, faith, you know, they're chanting. Like this. So these are the different elements. So in this we see the element of knowledge is much more. Kshatriyas have their based, everything is in knowledge. Brahmins is in knowledge. Their detachment is greater. One may ask, well, how is the Kshatriya's detachment greater? Very simple. We see in the Shastra, if we remember, in the Bhagavatam, whenever a king, whenever their son is ready to sit upon the throne, what do? They give up everything and go to the forest. They take nothing with them. So now, who's more detached? The Vaishya or the Kshatriya? Kshatriya has more, but as we mentioned before, it's only for his servant service, as long as he's the king. When he's not the king, he doesn't need that opulence. So immediately they just go to the forest, leave everything behind. They take nothing with them. That's why Vidura, he came and complained to Dhritarashtra. You're no longer in the seat of power, your sons aren't there, nothing is there, and you're living like a dog in the palace of Yudhishthira eating scraps. This is not a Kshatriya. So then Dhritarashtra agreed, and he left. It was just out of habit. He had become attached. So this is not becoming of a Kshatriya. They cannot become attached. They may have that opulence, but they cannot be attached to it. They use it, but they shouldn't be attached. Because they are representing the power, the ruling power of God. So it's God's opulence. And when it's handed over to the next ruler, it's left. So the renunciation is more. Then More than that is the Brahman. He doesn't even keep it in the first place, practically. Right? And then of Brahmins, those who are more and more realized. So like this, then we can see, therefore respect is set up in this way. But it's only to respect the qualities of God. Right? Krishna is all famous, all wealth, all knowledge, all power, all renunciation, all beauty. Right? Then we see the Kshatriyas are very beautiful, Shudras are very beautiful. So all these items that people are respected for, then those are respected because they're opulences of Krishna. And these four varnas, the four ashrams, they also come from Krishna. So that is respected. So like that, then one is able to appreciate the system. And it's just a matter of how do you maintain yourself? That's all. Like somebody's doing one business, somebody's doing another business, nobody cares. Main thing is business is going on, we're being maintained. Like that. So in this way then, one has to see which way one can be situated, and then this is the occupation. Then the other aspect is the ashram. Right? So in the ashram, then basically speaking, everyone in the beginning must be trained. Training must be there. Whether one is planning to get married or not planning to get married, training must be there. Because human life means one is trained. So, the idea is, the Vedic system is everybody concentrates on a particular area and then the whole society gets the benefit. Because when you do one thing, you can do generally one thing better than 500. So to study means the mind must be peaceful, when one cannot be worried about things of the house, one should not be interested in the or interacting with the opposite sex. All these things that create a disturbance to the mind that you're not able to study properly. So, therefore, everyone goes through that. They are trained nicely. And then, one has a choice. After training, then they can go to be married. Right? And then after, and then from marriage, then after performing those duties, then one retires, and then sannyas. So that's the basic. I think at this point we'll go more into that tomorrow, the ashrams. So if there's any question on the varnas, we'll take that, and then tomorrow we'll get into details on the ashrams. Yes. Setting up means setting up some courses and then charging fees. Traditionally, that wouldn't be done. The courses, either you have an individual Brahmin who would be running some courses, his own training, his own school, or you would have larger organized schools, which are called chadanas, which you have a head teacher, and then underneath that there's so many other teachers who specialize in different subjects, and then so many students come to learn from them. Or you would have these big conferences where the kings would be having big sacrifices or something would go on, or like the sacrifice at Naimisharanya, and they would all come together, and then at that sacrifice they just discuss philosophy. So training would go on. So these are the three general areas where the training would go on. And so in all of those, there's no charge. So it depends very much on the qualification of the teacher, qualification of the student. But as we discussed before, this is also very dependent upon people appreciating this. So then they, if the point is if you generate money and you have money, then you should give money. Right? Someone may say, okay, this is a brahminical activity, you know, I'm a brahmachari, why I should pay? But then one may also ask the question, well, you're a brahmachari, how is it you got, you know, $1,000 in your pocket that you say is yours? So, therefore, unfortunately, sometimes things have to be adjusted to make things work. But it should be understood this is not the ideal. Right? But it starts to work when people understand this, take their things, they have money, they give towards these causes. Like you have a place, and it's a very ideal place for training. It's centrally located, many people come, it has good facility. So there would be persons who would want to give money to see that educational things go on in those places. And then qualified students could come. But along with this also, is the Brahmins didn't waste their time on unqualified students. Just because someone wanted to learn didn't mean they were qualified. They had to prove by their character that they were qualified. So if you have free education, then someone comes, he can't live with anybody in the rooms, he's fighting, he doesn't like the prasad, he's getting upset with the management, this person is not qualified to learn. He would be asked to leave the premises. And those students who could behave properly, who could appreciate what they are learning, respect the teachers, and respect the place where they're learning and not create any nuisance, and they would be allowed to stay to study. And after that, seeing that, then it would be seen, do they have the ability to learn the subject? After checking their character, then they would see, do they actually have the ability? Right? Otherwise, you teach subject to someone who doesn't have the ability. If they think, now I am very qualified, then they can make a lot of trouble. So, the thing is as we understand these more, then these things can be put in place. They're very, very practical things. It means anyone who's dealt with devotees knows what a nicely qualified devotee is. Basically, any temple president, Sankirtan leader, temple commander, they can tell somebody's behaved, they're worth keeping around, or they're not. So, the first stage is very easy. The second stage, the teacher. He knows when he teaches this, what should be the normal reaction out of the student. They understood it, didn't understand it, like that. Right? Then he can say, this person is not a qualified student in this. Nice behavior, but he's not my student and my subject. He should check other teachers and their subjects. Right? So the system is very simple if we just accept it. The difficulty is not accepting it. Because of looking at the system from the aspect of who's in charge and who's got the money, therefore, you can't use terms like Vaishya or Shudra. You know, you can't use someplace, you can't even say Varnashram. You know, it's just like, oh no, this is... But this is for the uneducated or uninformed person. Because what's the big problem? Means human life starts with Shudra, right? Shudra means he can serve others without feeling any resentment. So, how many people do we know like that? If we look at ourselves, can we say, I can serve under somebody, the temple commander, wash the pots, the Sankirtan leader, the temple president, without any resentment? And if we can say yes, then we can say, okay, I qualify for human life. And if we say, no, I have a problem with it, then we qualify for forest life. So if we look at it from the Western culture, the standard of a Shudra is light years beyond what the Western culture has to offer. So we generally try to look at it, because in the West we're very proud of our position. Also in the East, let's say the material world, we're proud of our position, who we are. We're very, how you say, full of ourselves. We are, number one is, you know, okay, you know. You know, number one's number one for good reason. So now we look at everybody else. Okay, there's the Brahmins, there's the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, and then of course on the bottom the Shudras. But coming from especially Western culture, we have to go, well, there's the Shudras, and then above that there's the Vaishyas, and then above that there's the Kshatriyas, and then above that's the Brahmins. Because first, human life begins with the Tato Brahma Jigyasa. And the next step is, it begins with, I can serve without resentment. Because we start off as a brahmachari or a brahmacharini. right? We start off in the system as a student. We always like to say, you know, bring in the example, the Brahmins are the head, the Kshatriyas the arms, the Vaishyas are the stomach, and the Shudras are the feet. But in the ashrams, it also works the same way, right? The Brahmacharis are the feet, the Grihastas are the waist, the Vanaprastas are the arms, and the Sannyasis are the head. So everybody starts at the feet anyway, whatever the occupational system. So everybody starts off with being able to perform menial service. And as a devotee, we accept the Shudra title of Dasa. On our name, the title we take is that of the Shudras. We're not taking Sharma of the Brahmins or Chakravarti of the Kshatriyas or, you know, Goldberg of the Vaishyas, like this. We're taking Dasa, right? It means Vaishya's name should have something mentioning prosperity, wealth, like this. So we see that a certain community of businessmen always like to use these terms, like this. So we're taking the Shudra title, Dasa, servant. And we start off our life as Brahmacharis, Brahmacharins, as servant. And as a devotee, we maintain that throughout our life. So if one can't accept that of service without resentment, then that's the first thing we have to work on. We find Varnashram is difficult because the first point we have difficulty with. Serving without resentment. You know, being loyal. Right? Shudra is loyal. Who he works with, he's loyal. Like that. He's respectful. So if we check around, socially, that's not so, these are not considered very valuable points. Interestingly enough, if we go back, you know, 20, 30 years, even within our own ISKCON history, we see that these were valued. Respect for others. We even offered our obeisances every day to the other devotees in the temple, the other brahmacharis, brahmacharins in the temple. Nowadays, does that go on? No, we have problem. We don't offer our obeisances to our president or other leaders. And, you know, sannyasi, if they saw us, okay. And GBC men, forget it. You know? Like that. So it's kind of like the culture has dropped. So then we have to see that these are important. So this is why Varnashram is important. Because based on the devotional principles, we should be respectful to everyone. You know, even to an ant, let alone human beings, let alone of human beings, devotees. So that respect is there. If we can't do, then that is formalized in the way of sadhana by the Pancharatra. And if that still doesn't get the point across, then it is established by the Varnashram. And if that we can't do, then, of course, Y2K is there to save us, we can go to the forest, and no one will think badly. No one will say, oh, he was an uncivilized person. No, because one will have gone for practical reasons. One can take the advantage to escape. So the whole point is there's natural respect amongst all these. And in this, as I mentioned before, the respect between others is very refined. Means you have a Kshatriya and you have a Shudra. Now let's say the Shudra is older than the Kshatriya. The Shudra will respect the Kshatriya because he is the Kshatriya. But the Kshatriya, when he speaks to the Shudra, he will speak to him in respectful terms because he's older. Right? At least in the Indian languages, you have endings on the words for those who are older than you, those who are respectable, those who are equal, and those who are junior. Some Western languages have equals and superior. But in the Indian languages, they have all three. So the king will speak to that Kshatriya as, and using the older terminology, respectful terminology. Right? Though who walks in front will be the king. So there's mutual respect. The Dharma Shastras get into that if two people meet each other on the road, right? It's also said, if you're going down a path and there's only space for one person, right? And someone must step off the path, then for an old person, right? A king, then, you know, a very, how you say, qualified brahmana, a pregnant woman, like this. Did I mention diseased person? Yeah, diseased, someone very diseased, invalid. Any wise person will move off the road. Right? They'll all move for that person. Because, oh, someone carrying a burden. Like somebody's carrying something very heavy and all that. A cultured person will move out of the road for them. They won't think, well, this is this person carrying, he's a Shudra and I'm a Vaishya, so he should move off the road. No, he's carrying the burden. It's very difficult how he'll move off the road. So the Vaishya will step out of the way and let the Shudra go by. Now, by doing that, it is one, the most practical, and two, now that Shudra will respect more that Vaishya. But this is a cultured person. And he will feel protected. Yeah. Same way as the Brahmins, even though the road belongs to them. If the king is coming and all his regalia, they'll move out of the way because the king is feeling, you know, he's feeling big that day. So if you get in his way, it upsets him. So you just let him go. Why not? Let him enjoy. You know, he has to run the kingdom anyway. Brahmins don't want to do it. So in this, it's not just that you have these nice little boxes on the computer with little arrows and all that. No, it's that they have to relate with each other. So the first thing is to understand ourselves, who we are. Second is how we will relate to others. You know? So even though we're in the temple and somebody comes from outside, who is not a devotee, still they must be respected. One is a guest, because they're God's guest. They've come to the temple. And two, according to their position. If they're a big businessman, they must be respected. They're wealthy. Or if they're a big politician, they must be respected, because they have influence. If they're a big scholar, they must be respected. Or if they're very famous, you know, some Shudra, they're very famous, they must be respected. Or any combination. If somebody has two of these things, they're wealthy and famous, then that gets prominence. Or wealthy, famous, and influential. You know, like you have the Sultan of Brunei. He's not only influential, but he's wealthy. So then he would get respect over someone else who was either just influential or just wealthy. So in other words, the first thing is understand ourselves. Second thing is understand how we relate to others. Because that's when the things start. How to interrelate with everybody else. Then you have the culture. Otherwise, if, you know, Vaishyas just make money, you know, Kshatriyas are in charge and they take tax, Brahmins do this. That's not the culture yet. That's just the framework of the culture. The culture actually starts when people start interacting with each other. That's when the culture starts. Right? So, in the beginning, it's difficult, but until we train, means you establish Brahmins, then they can train Kshatriyas. Kshatriyas can create the facilities in which the Vaishyas and the Shudras can thrive. Right? Business can't thrive if people are stealing, there's no facility, this, that. Right? Kshatriyas can't work until they have knowledge. So you have to establish the Brahmins. Right? Varnashram starts with Brahmins, not with growing carrots. Like that. So these educational things should be there, and devotees should understand and support. And those who go and learn should be qualified. And the teachers, then they also should be qualified. Right? Then you have a nice system. Does that make any sense? Okay. Yes. I can't remember where I I haven't come across it yet, but I mean, we're only partway through. The basic thing is the question is it was heard that the Brahmin is 100% engaged in Yajna, Kshatriya 75, then the Vaishya 50, Shudra 25, like this. Main point is due to the Brahmana, his occupational duty is knowledge and sacrifice. Right? That is his duty. While for the Kshatriya, his duty is based on that knowledge. Right? It's based on that knowledge, and he himself will perform. So the Vaishya then, to do business, there must be culture. But that doesn't mean Shastras don't talk about business. Right? Shastras talk about what the Brahmins and Kshatriyas do. That's why you see in the Bhagavatam, it only talks about Kshatriyas and Brahmanas. It's just not talking about Vaishyas and Shudras there. Because business is an art. So then, how do you say? Yeah, so they will run their life according to Dharma. Right? But the business itself is business. It's not based on the scriptures like the Kshatriyas is. So therefore it's a little bit less. And then the Shudras, their art is also, it has basis in the Shastra, but their application of it then is not. They know that if they're singing, they have a raga, there's certain notes that have to be in that raga, and how they move have to be there. And then, you know, and after that, it's up to their mind and their intelligence. So connection is there, but it's less. Right? You understand? So the internal connection to the scriptures, the sacrifice is less for each one. That also gives rise for respecting the other person who their duties is a little bit more, has more connection. Like that. Now for the devotees, then whatever they do that for the Lord. So therefore, if they follow the process of Nishkam Karma Yoga, whatever they do, that is being done for the Lord's satisfaction. Therefore, for the devotees, that's why the point is always, it doesn't matter. Because whatever activity one's doing, it's for pleasing the Lord. So by doing one's duty for pleasing the Lord, then that is 100% sacrifice. Huh? It's 100% yajna. Therefore, the devotee is the realized Brahman. Even if he's doing Shudra activities, he's doing it for Krishna. Therefore, he's 100% engaged in sacrifice. So he is actually on the platform of a Brahman. Though occupationally, he's performing Shudra activities. Does that make any sense? Yeah. So this is a fine, one always has to be able to balance. It's a very important aspect. Our philosophy, achinta bheda bheda tattva, means simultaneously one and different. So if we really want to understand Daiva Varnashram, we have to be able to simultaneously see the material mechanics of the system. At the same time, what's overlaying that is the spiritual aspects of it, of consciousness. So we have to be able to deal with both at once. Previously, in the history, the other Vaishnavas, they would kind of separate the two. They know this is God's laws, we follow them, bus. And those who are Shudras just perform the activities of Shudras. They wouldn't perform Brahminical activities. Because it just makes things very easy and simple. But with Lord Chaitanya's establishment of the Sankirtan mission, then we have to be able to work with both at once. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur asked Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur to establish Daiva Varnashram. So then this means we have to be able to work with both at once. Like that. Yes.
Practical questions. When we distribute books, we have to ask the money from people.
Yeah.
And from one point, it's like Vaishnava activity, because we have to deal with the money. We have to sometimes, you know, people are start to buy it. So how to do this activity in the Brahminical mode? Is it possible to
Okay. Question is on doing book distribution or, you know, whatever we're, you know, we'll take book distribution. That we're taking money and we're, you know, we have a book, it costs so much, and how to balance that it's a, in the mode of goodness, it's a brahminical activity. So basically Prabhupada's given two descriptions of this. You know, one is that it is, how do you say, the brahminical aspect is that this book is transcendental knowledge. So the Brahman's business is to give transcendental knowledge to others. And then the others are grateful for that, and then they give some dakshin in return. So this is explained in Upadeshamrita. Is that the dadati pratigrinati? We give them the book, and they appreciate it, and they give us money. Right? Because what else do they have? They have to give something of value. So they have money, they value money, they give money. Means if they surrender, and, you know, that's another thing. Then that's the price. But something must be exchanged. That's the giving gifts, accepting gifts. It must be exchanged. So the brahminical understanding is I'm giving knowledge, and they're giving us something in return. You know? And we basically at least try to encourage them to give more than what the book costs. Right? We try not to lose money, because otherwise then we can't distribute it further. Right? Before, you learned from a person and you spoke to another person. But now that doesn't work as well. So it goes in one ear, out the other. So then you have a book, then they can read it, refresh their understanding, deepen their understanding. So at least we have to pay for the book. Right? So like that is there. And then for those who have more business kind of like mentality, then they're also very happy because they may be doing the same principle, but money is coming across the hand, which is very essential for the business mentality. Even if it's not their money, it doesn't matter. Just something was, you know, at a cheap price was sold and we got money for that. And then they're very happy. So Prabhupada also is mentioning both aspects. So book distribution itself, selling books, is not the brahminical activity. Distributing transcendental knowledge is the brahminical activity. To do that, we may use the art of salesmanship to see that the transcendental knowledge is taken. But if we don't do that properly, right? Means in the past, many have felt if we just got money out of them, you know, take Sita back from Ravana, you know, Lakshmi back from the demons, that was perfect. They didn't care that the person was upset, never wanted to see a devotee again, took the Bhagavad Gita and threw it in the trash. That didn't matter, because the next morning after Mangal Arti, their name would be there in lights. That was what they were going for. So this is the Vaishya mentality. The Brahman mentality is I give them this, I want them to value it, read it, and use it in their life. Therefore, I will deal with them in such a way they will not become disturbed. So all these things where they would do and take more money than they should and not give change back, this is all Vaishya mentality. And even that, uncultured Vaishya mentality, because a good Vaishya never burns anyone out. Because he knows, then they'll come back. I can sell them again. So the untrained Vaishya mentality then can make disturbance. But if we take the preaching, it doesn't create disturbance. Okay. What time is it? Last question and we'll stop. Yes. What is brahminical initiation? What about those who get it who are unqualified? Okay, brahminical initiation means that one who has developed the brahminical qualifications of the mode of goodness then receives that initiation. then the mantras and all that have potency. If they're not qualified, then the potency will be very less. You know? So it's a matter of, we shouldn't make pujaris, give people second initiation just because we don't have a pujari. Because otherwise, how long they'll last anyway? You know? You have a good pujari, they're a pujari, they're still a pujari. Right? You come back after 5 years, 10 years, they're still a pujari. You make someone a pujari who's not a pujari, you come back after 6 months, you have the same problem. So if we're actually good managers, why will just have such a temporary problem? Train people that they're qualified Brahmins, then we solve the problem. Right? Point is for us, that qualification comes from devotional development. When we're fixed in the process of chanting the holy name, we're fixed in devotional activities, we know how to associate properly with devotees, we can appreciate devotees, we have faith in the process. In other words, it's all going on very nicely. Then second initiation is worthwhile. We are dedicated to the preaching mission. Otherwise, better to wait. Right. That make any? Okay. So we'll end here, and then tomorrow we'll, if there's any more questions on the aspects of varna, we'll continue with that, and then we'll go into the aspects of ashram. Okay. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhakti Brinda ki, Jai Nitya Gaura Premanandi.